Well, the sounds of Squeeze doing black coffee in bed should give you a hint to our next guest here. It's Dave Thomas, coffee roaster. Some call him a coffee artist, coffee genius, owner of Sentinel Coffee. Dave, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Really
happy
appreciate
so
it. And you've already brewed a couple of delicious, amazing brews, which actually can be seen on the K2O website. We just did a video of you brewing up a couple of different ones. So tell me the first one I have in this big cup here. What, now, what, that was an Ethiopian blend.
It's actually a straight Ethiopian from Yirgacheffe. Yirgacheffe is a growing area. And I used a Napoleon pot, which is basically this little vacuum pot that sucks the water up to the top. And, you know, it brews and then it kind of magically comes back down.
Suck it up to the...
Yeah, magic. Thermodynamic magic. But I think the real... It looks cool, but it's also the real reason they have that is that it goes up to the top and it's almost like an automatic timer because it sits up there. But then as soon as it cools, it starts to cool, it sucks back down.
Okay.
So then it's timing your brew. And it's all about heat and time is all brewing is.
It's really a perfect cup of coffee.
Yeah, it is
fantastic.
And it had nothing to do with me because I just basically put it in the thing and had it go. And that's one of the nice things about that is it kind of times the coffee for you. A lot of the pour over methods, you really kind of have to, you know, pour it slowly and stir and everything.
Right.
But that one just does it all itself.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was gonna ask about pour over is kind of how I do it.
And that's like the new vogue way.
Well, it used
to be called Melita, but now it's pour over.
Right. It's just Melita. Is there a difference?
No.
No.
But, yeah.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Yeah. I'm much more sophisticated than I thought I was.
Yeah, you're very sophisticated.
So the controversy there is what should the temperature of the water be?
203 degrees, if you want to be precise.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because I heard 194.
Oh, that's not true.
Okay. I actually just always boil my water.
Yeah, well, so you can – because nobody's putting a thermometer. Some people are, but not many people are putting a thermometer in their water. What you want to do is look for when the pot is on the stove is look for the bubbles just start – they call it dancing.
Okay.
Where they just start to come up. It's not – rolling boil, they're just starting to come up like a boil.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a good gauge of when it's ready to
What's the risk of going too low or too hot?
Well, too low is worse because you're under extracting the beans and so you're going to end up with a lot of the off flavors with none of the actual full florals or any of the real body of the coffee. So it'll taste kind of if you've ever had ashy tasting coffee, that's usually under extracted.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then if you go over, you'll
scald it and you'll over extract and you'll get a lot of acids that kind of extract at higher temperatures.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, I had a text question come in. Someone heard
already.
That you were already. And this is exciting. Jake, a friend of mine, Jake, texted me and said, if I had the opportunity to please ask you, he says, as a Sentinel coffee drinker, is he better off buying whole beans and grinding them via a fan blade grinder immediately prior to brewing or buying the pre-ground coffee, which is ground with a burr grinder?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it'll maybe have greater oxidation or other things. So
that's the real problem. Is when you have it grind, you have more surface area in contact with oxygen. So what's called volatile aromatics are, you know, everything, all these little flavors that people talk about that maybe nobody ever hears is like the strawberry and the peach and the floral and everything like that. Those are all volatile aromatics. And they'll just kind of dissipate off as it gets exposed to oxygen. So the whole bean kind of locks them in, and as you grind it, then it kind of just like evaporates off, right? So you'll have a flatter cup of coffee the longer it's ground. But at the same time, if you're propeller grinding and it turns into powder, then maybe that's not the best thing because it really is surface area to water temperature and time. So the finer the grind, the shorter you want your brew. The coarser the grind, the longer you want your brew. So that's why French presses are coarse grind because they have a five-minute brew.
They sit there and
an espresso has like a 30-second brew.
Right.
So
because you're forcing the water through instead
really
of letting it
quickly,
steep, sort of. Right.
Yeah, and except for the Turkish, which we just
so
talked
that was
about.
The other.
Yeah, which is completely breaking all the rules.
The Napoleonic. This is a Napoleonic. Is that?
It's called a Napoleon pot. It's
Napoleon.
Just two pots on top of each other. Yeah.
Was it invented for Napoleon?
I have no idea.
I think it was.
Yeah,
I'm going to say it was.
Yeah.
Then you did this Turkish brew. Now tell me about this. It is it is very aromatic and very cool. So tell me about the process.
Well, so it's one of the oldest forms of brewing. It's literally just a pot that you boil the coffee and your spices and your sugar all together at the same time. And, I mean, you call it Turkish, which is – kind of the common way that people describe it, but it's also, you know, Israelis will say it's Israeli coffee. Greeks will call it Greek coffee.
But it's boiling the coffee.
It's boiling the coffee with
the water as the water comes to temperature.
And also three times. So it's actually going against that whole 203 degree rule, but I like breaking rules. So I like doing the Turkish all the time, and it just makes a really nice, rich cup of coffee.
And what else? What other aromas am I getting
here?
Yeah,
so there's cardamom, which is a very common thing in Turkish style. And then also I put a little bit of a rose petal in there from some roses in Gustavus.
Nice. So Sitka rose.
Sitka rose variety. And it just kind of adds a little bit more aromatics to it.
A little bit of sugar as well?
A little bit of sugar because it's unfiltered, it's pretty intense, but the sugar kind of, you know, like sugar with, you know, tomato sauce or whatever, it just kind of pulls all the flavors together.
Does it also help with that boiling process?
Yeah, it also does do that.
Because when you boiled it, it kind of, the first time it kind of boiled up like you normally would. The second time it really almost like really came up quick.
The froth. Yeah. You're looking for the froth boil.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the third time it looked like it wasn't quite as frothy and you were able to boil it a little bit more.
Yeah. And that's like when the oils start to break.
Okay. Well, cheers.
Cheers. Yeah.
Yes. Is that what what's a good coffee term?
That could be a coffee term.
Okay. Yes. I use that in the beer industry all the time, but.
It's all the, you know, the to your health kind of thing.
Oh, that is so delicious.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's a really
a great combination of flavors.
It's a perfect thing to mull over, too. It's kind of like that the brandy of coffee. It just kind of, you just sip it and enjoy it.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, and then it's
not, I was thinking it was going to be this, like, highly intensely coffee thing, but it's not as much.
It's not. And I think, so the kind of the key is not putting too much coffee in it, obviously, but it is a lot of coffee. It's 2 tablespoons per every 4 ounces of water.
Okay.
So it's actually quite a bit of coffee. But then at the same time, you know, if you do it right, it's just nice and smooth and thick. But I've definitely I was in Greece actually traveling, and I was like all excited. I was going to have like the best, you know, Greek coffee out there, and I had some really undrinkable cups of coffee. So, and I feel like I do it a little bit better than they do sometimes. But
I was just in Spain a little while ago and had incredible coffee in Spain. I mean, it felt to me like as good as Italian coffee, and maybe a lot of it kind of was the same techniques.
And
amazing,
I think it's just anybody who's paying attention to coffee, it will make it good. I mean, one of the things I like to kind of tell people is there's just a huge amount of people working, you know, hand labor that goes into coffee. And so to kind of respect those people, I think you really need to pay attention to your coffee and enjoy it and fully and do it right, brew it right, and then also enjoy it because these people, they spent hours and hours hand sorting. They're hand picking the cherries. They're hand sorting the green beans, and there's just a huge amount of work that goes into a cup of coffee, and many people don't understand.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you and how you got into this. What's the story of how you got so heavily into coffee yourself?
Yeah. Well, I was a bartender for a long time, and then about 16 years ago or something, I decided that I wanted to. I was really starting to notice that coffee was kind of the same as a bar, but a little bit less dramatic.
Yeah.
And then also, it was just that, you know, a really good community living room. People were kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. It's like a more active kind of life affirming kind of place, and you know, like you go into Copa and you can have a good conversation with people, and you know, the neighborhood is kind of coming together. And I really liked that, so I kind of got into coffee, started a coffee house, and then at some point I decided I wanted to delve deeper and started roasting myself. So
and have you then? Where do you get your beans? And have you gotten into the supply and all that stuff? And do you work specifically with farms, or how is that?
And a lot of it, one of the things I like to point out is I like to buy fair trade coffee a lot because of the fact that there's a third party that's guaranteeing that price to the farmer. I get coffee from all over the world, but and each kind of coffee has its own, you know, importer exporter kind of program. But definitely, like right now we have a new coffee, the Haitian coffee, that is a really good direct direct purchase that I think it really helps the economy of Haiti. It's just and they're doing amazing coffee, and it's just going to – it's going to help them kind of get back on their feet.
And so the coffee comes into you. Mm-hmm. What does it look like when it comes to you?
So coffee is a cherry, so it's a fruit. And then inside is usually two beans that have this little parchment layer on them. So the fruit and the parchment layer are taken off before it comes to me. So it's called a green coffee bean. It's just the bean itself, and it's green. And so at that point, I need to assess its moisture content and then also – roast it. And the roasting process is with my roaster is a fluid airbed process. So it's kind of like a glorified popcorn popper. It's just kind of like it just like keeps the beans on a hotbed of air. And
is that an industrial kind of scale, commercial scale?
Yeah. And it's a small batch roaster, but it is, you know, it's loud and it's not it's not something you want to like hang out by.
I can't have it in the dining room.
No. Yeah. But the fluid airbed. Is the whole idea is it's kind of the temperature is the same all throughout the entire bed, so it's a universal temperature. It's conductive. I mean, sorry, convective rather than conductive.
Right.
And so that basically through that process, you're going through the Maillard reaction, which is proteins and sugars kind of combining, creating new flavors, which is where all the famed, caramel, strawberry, whatever it comes from. And then and then later on in the higher roasts, you end up caramelizing sugars. And that's where a lot of the kind of the darker roast profiles come from, those deep caramels. And then at some point, you just end up carbonizing sugar. So that's why darker roasts tend to taste less sweet because you've actually broken down the sugars and carbonized them.
I see.
Yeah. So,
but that's that interesting myth. The darker the bean, the stronger it is caffeine wise.
That's actually false narrative because you burn it off. You're burning off caffeine as you roast, but it's so minute that it's kind of hard to measure.
But it's really just about how long it's roasting.
It's basically how much sugar you've retained and how much you've just kind of burnt off.
Yeah.
I like dark roast as well, and for certain events. But I tend to like kind of the high mediums because you still retain some of the bean flavor while also kind of getting the caramel flavors.
Right. Yeah. Well, as you've grown your business, what are some of the surprises or things you ran into that you wouldn't have anticipated? What are some of the kind of milestones that you think about that you got through or passed?
I think first
you were doing this in Gustavus, right? And now you're doing
it. Well, actually, I was doing it in the basement of Rainbow Foods.
Oh, okay, right, right. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, and then and that was like always a trial. I had to carry 154-pound bags of beans downstairs and around corners and everything. And David Otteson was very kind, letting me just kind of go pale-mail all over his place. And then I went to Gustavus because my wife got a job at the park. And that's been really great. It's a nice little spot, and I can – do the roasting, and then I was basically using the ferry service to bring it back and forth, which is the only real economical way to move beans because otherwise I'm competing with people that don't have those costs. And then actually the electricity costs went up in Gustavus, and also the ferry became really undependable. And so I started this roastery in Juneau to kind of service Juneau and lose those costs that were kind of building,
Yeah. And your customer base was growing, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And that
so
kind
actually
of
we have enough in Gustavus now. I do still have that machine going.
Right.
And we service Gustavus and Sitka and a few other places.
Any thoughts of actually doing a Sentinel coffee shop, that kind of thing?
You mean like a coffee shop?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The great thing, I've had two coffee shops before.
Okay,
and the great
right.
thing about being the roaster is somebody else can run the coffee shop.
That's what I was wondering. Like, thanks. Yeah. I can go to Copa and get it there.
Yeah, it's great. Copa is doing it. It's a great job. And, and I can go and have a sandwich and nobody's asking me to like do books.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of really fun. I mean, I like doing, making coffees like this and talking about it and everything like that. And I do that, we have this roaster and I have a lot of machines there that, if somebody stops by, we have a little tasting.
So that's what I was going to get at. Mm-hmm. So you're at home, you don't want a cup of coffee, no one's around to impress.
Yeah.
So what? How do you make coffee? What's your kind of preferred method? Just making a cup of coffee or making a couple of cups of coffee?
I use the pour-over method many times.
Yes.
but I also do a whole variety of options. But a lot of times the pour-over, it's quick.
Yeah.
And
delicious.
Also, yeah, and delicious. It's very good. And I usually use actually a Bialetti because it has the screen filter. And the screen is actually fine enough now that you're not ending up with a whole bunch of silt in there. And then because the paper does kind of absorb a lot of the kind of the body of the coffee, so you end up with a lot of the aromatics, but it tends to be thinner. So I like the screen a little bit better.
Well, that's a good tip.
Yeah. And then at the same time, I do like, you know, when I'm kind of like just sitting back and, you know, have an inside morning, I'll have a French press because it's just really nice and thick and kind of like similar to the Turkish where you can just mull over it.
Right,
you know?
Right. And then French press, just real quick, French press, don't over grind your coffee if you're putting in your French press,
if you put it in the French press, it's the coarsest grind you're going to use because it's 5 minutes of brew time.
Right.
So, yeah, you want to – it's hard to describe, but it's not like you can see parts of the bean. You don't want to see like a quarter of the bean still left, but you want it to be broken up into kind of like a – almost like a – a little bit bigger than kosher salt.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, David, thanks so much for coming in. David Thomas from Sentinel Roasting and Sentinel Coffee, owner of Sentinel Coffee. And boy, thanks so much for the coffee. It was delicious. What a treat here on Foodie Friday. Pictures of the raw coffee beans are on kto.org/JunoAfternoon. And also the video of you doing the coffee is there as well, David. Thanks so much. And that's it for Juno Afternoon today. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Hanson Gress and listeners like you.